Okay, thanks. Thanks for the organizers to give me the opportunity to be visiting here. So I'll talk about a few systems where this unusual symmetry of lattice or boundary condition that leads to some sort of interesting physics. So I think okay, so let me start out acknowledging my collaborators, students and collaborators. So the work I'll be presenting is a collective effort of my students and postdocs, David, Andrew, Matthew, Dong. And the samples are largely homegrown from Bob Kaffer's group, and sometimes we work with Nanlin Wang's group. We ourselves grow some of these samples. We're getting into growing samples recently. And we use synchrotron and neutron beam lines around the country and around the world. I'll not bore you with the details. Recently, we are trying to explore systems where one could possibly do spectroscopy of Hall effect physics, quantum Hall effect physics. And we definitely benefit a lot chatting with theorists. Okay, so this talk is mostly focused on these two topics. And then if I have time, I'll talk a bit about this thing. So we have been focused to look at correlated electrons on frustrated lattices, like triangular lattice or Kagome lattice, and basically look at the electron spectral function and try to find correlate with the phase they exhibit. And very recently, we have almost accidentally discovered the Dirac fermions in a non-graphene system. Not only that, this Dirac particles seem to exhibit a form of topological Hall effect, spin Hall effect. So probably half of my talk will be like on this topic. And on the in terms of most experimentalists have their own instrumentation development program. So in our case, this instrumentation development is inelastic or elastic resonant X-ray scattering. There, the goal is to be able to probe collective charge modes. In a sense, they're analogs of spin modes you could measure with neutron. So the idea is, can we measure collective modes that may emerge out of a phase transition or a broken symmetry in a new phase, and can we couple to those modes and get there. So in this case, this particular topic is more instrumentation development than to the real stuff, real physics stuff. Okay, so the technique we used are X-ray scattering, which inelastic and elastic, which allows one to probe this strong correlation physics, MOT physics, in much more detail than X-ray absorption or X-ray or optical spectroscopies would allow one to probe. We use angle result photoemission spectroscopy to look at the single particle excitations, say Fermi surface, quasi particle, self energy. So and then we also have a program on frustrated magnets or quantum magnet. This is a relatively new program in my group, is where we use neutron scattering to look at the spin dynamics or any unusual order and probe the critical behavior. I also have a bit of interest in soft matter, where I work on this protein folding-unfolding problem, because it turns out that underlying physics has many similarities with spin frustration or strong correlation. So thematically, it's correlation and frustration that binds these topics together in my group. Okay, so phase diagrams. So recently, we We have been working mostly on these two phase diagrams. These are the very new, very recent ones. So in first case, this is the phase diagram of sodium cobalt oxide. It is the first realization of doped spin half triangular lattice, which is metallic. Actually, there is no other known example of that. Not only that, the system can be doped over the entire range to 100%. And it has all these unusual phases. Notable among them is this Curie-Weiss metallic phase. It has superconductivity at low doping, metal insulator transition right in the middle of the phase diagram. It exhibits very large thermal power, and this thermal power is spin dependent. Another system, this is copper doped titanate. It turns out the system has a CDW to superconductivity overlap and competition, at least apparent competition. This is the compound. So this is unique in the sense this is the only system where you can tune the chemical potential and drive the system from a CDW to a superconductor. And we have recently shown that the CDW phase is not nesting driven. Actually, Fermi surface has no nesting space. It turns out the ordering vector has nothing to do with the Fermi surface.
Is it commensurate?
It is commensurate. It has some structural effect. And it turns out it satisfied many of the characteristics predicted by Walter Kahn and Oberhauser back in the 60s. So there are a few theory papers. They like to call it Kahn-Oberhauser excitonic CDW. So what we are trying to probe, how this excitonic CDW competes or coexists with superconductivity. Superconductivity in this case, we know that it is S wave. We don't know whether it's isotropic or anisotropic. It's node-less superconductive. Okay, a third project in my group is to look at these triangular organic compounds by Kanoda. They have shown that the system doesn't order down to the lowest temperature, and it is a candidate of quantum spin liquid, where you can also access the superconducting state. So, what do we want to do? What is new in this? What is interesting from our point of view is that we want to see. Since the claim is that this is a 2D quantum spin liquid, we want to actually probe and see whether it has realized any fractionalization. In other words, whether charge and spin has different velocities. So that is something one can do with ARPES. One can take out an electron and see the decay channels in the spectral function. The fourth topic we have been trying to understand thermopower in this compound, and it turns out the conventional high thermopower material is bismuth, antimony, tin-based alloys. So we were trying to explore, understand, correlate their thermopower with electronic structure, and we accidentally found that it has, at certain composition range, it has a Dirac point. And not only that, it has, in the insulating phase, this is a band insulator, it goes through, insulating phase supports a surface state which goes through a topological change. I'll get into describing what is that topological change, which can be described as a transition from Z2 plus to Z2 minus. So it has a non-trivial topological surface state. And half of my talk will focus on this, but I'll start out on the sodium cobalt oxides updating.
Yes. Is it understood generally how thermopower correlates with electronic structure, or is that what you're trying to...
That's what we're trying to probe. Okay. It's not understood. That is the... program here. So the phase diagram, let me just give a brief overview. It has large thermal power in high sodium content, high doping. Specific heat is large compared to LDA or other calculations. And superconductivity is at lower sodium concentration range. And there's metal insulator transition with a complex field dependence near one half, not at the half field case. Half field case is not experimentally realized because material becomes unstable if you suck out all the sodium from the system. And in high sodium concentration range, it has very complex magnetism and transport. It turns out that one can fit the data with local moments, Curie-Weiss-like behavior, yet the samples are conducting metal, so local moment metal. And then near the band insulator regime, one can, at certain doping, one can realize a 3D magnetic order. Okay. So angle resolved photoemission traditionally is a surface sensitive probe, but it depends on the degree of surface sensitivity depends on the incident photon energy. So it turns out that if you probe the system with 35 eV, this particular system one can calculate, 35 eV, which most people do for technical results, we can build instruments there. It's much easier to build instruments there. Then your probe depth or sensitivity is about 2 to 3 layers or even one layer. It depends on the details depend on the material. However, if you go to lower photon energy or to higher photon energy, if you go to like 1 kilovolt, then your sensitivity improves quite a bit. You can probe up to 50 angstrom into the material. But if you go to lower photon energies, you can also improve. You can go up to like 20, 22 angstrom. So in our the advantage in going to lower photon energy is that your incident beam it has lower energy, so your relative resolution is higher. If you go to higher photon energy, then achieving resolution is very difficult. So what we have done in this case, we perform these experiments at lower photon energies. This is similar to doing laser photoemission, except for the fact that with laser photoemission, one cannot systematically tune. But with a low energy, small ring synchrotron, one can systematically tune.
It's equivalent just because you're getting into the same energy range? Is that what you mean? You said it's similar to laser photoemission.
Yes. If I have a harmonic from laser at 9 eV...
Can we get it up there?
At this point, no. At this point, we can go up to 6 or 7 eV. Right. So that's why we're still doing synchrotrons. And it turns out that not all materials would be suitable because by going to lower photon energies, your K-space, there is kinematic limitation, your K-space is limited. If your Fermi surface is large, you cannot just go out to, for example, with 6 eV photon energy, you cannot probe the antinodal point in high TC copper oxides. You can probe the nodal point, but you cannot probe the antinodal point. So in this particular compound, we are lucky that our Fermi surface is within that range. So for that reason, 9 eV photon, well, I mean, bunch of reasons, 9 eV photon works to look at 10 layer deep.
You can vary the 9 around anyway?
Yes, I can vary.
So if 9 wasn't good enough, you go up to 11.
I mean, yes, I can go up to 11. That is the advantage of synchrotron. Yes. So what we find is that the Fermi surface topology and the band structure we reported with 35 eV photon energy it doesn't change. Actually, it has the same, the topology of the Fermi surface is the same, and it's different from LDA prediction. And not only that, the RPS Fermi surface, it also satisfies Luttinger theorem. In other words, it has all the electrons you'd expect it to be. And you can check another thing, is whether the density of state you're measuring at the Fermi level, is it consistent with the density of state you expect from a bulk measurement, such as specific heat. So if you do that, it does. So for this reason, we believe that this is not only experiments are bulk sensitive, it satisfies all the requirements. So Fermi surface topology is like that, and that's different from LDA.
The sodium concentration, huh? Are there the sodium concentration here?
Yes, it is. The one I showed is 1/3.
1/3, okay.
If you go to a different concentration, then you can, you will go out of that range. You cannot do bulk photoemission necessarily.
How big is it, the anisotropy, maybe in the charge transport or something?
It's about 2 to 3 orders of magnitude, and it depends on sodium concentration.
Is it this value, presumably?
It's about 2 orders of magnitude. Yeah. Okay, so we can also look at the quasi-particle line shape with high resolution and extract the self-energy and try to look at its scaling behavior. In this case, I'm trying to look at the scaling of in frequency. So what we find in this case is that within the data range, it is around 2. So it has this, which is consistent with bulk measurement of resistivity, that in these compositions, they have T-square resistivity, T-square behavior rather than T-linear behavior. Cobaltites exhibit T-linear behavior at a different sodium concentration. That concentration we cannot probe with bulk photoemission at this point. Okay. So this is just the basic electronic structure.
So you say the superconductor is essentially a permeability.
Yes, I believe so. Based on my experiments and other things, yes, superconductor is a Fermi liquid, normal state.
So how was
yes.
The
I'm sorry?
How did you
This is just fitting the line shapes, quasi-particle line shape, and fit it with a Lorentzian, yeah. But still, you can see my uncertainty range. I cannot rule out if it is not 1.5. This is the precision level of the experiments. Okay, so that's the basic framework, basic electronic structure. It has one Fermi surface. It has all the density of states and all the electrons in the Fermi surface, as seen in the bulk. So if you move off, if you go to a specific sodium concentration, 0.5, you see it's, if you look at the resistivity, it's quite rich. So this is the resistivity. It has a turn around 53 Kelvin, another turn around 25 Kelvin. And if your sample is very clean and pure, it has a divergence. At low temperature, it is insulator. And if you look at the susceptibility, it has one kink here, another kink here. It has two kinks. So this kink is around 90 Kelvin or 88 Kelvin. And this kink, susceptibility kink, it coincides with this resistivity upturn. And very recently, there is another, something else has been found here, but it's not seen in this scale of the scale I'm using to plot things. So neutron scattering results seem to suggest that there is some sort of spin stripe formation around 90 Kelvin, and almost nothing happens to, and that spin stripe ordering vector does not care about the system going through this metal insulator transition. This is very puzzling. Okay, so let's see if RPS is sensitive to that. Okay, so let me...
Is there anything about the structure in between the planes at X.05?
Oh, in this point of five, the sodium's order long range as opposed to other. Right. Yeah, I'm getting into that. So it turns out this is a bit strange because for a triangular network, magic numbers are 1/3 and 2/3, and we have superconductivity near 1/3, large thermopower near 2/3, but 1/2 is not a magic number for a triangular network. And a commensurate charge ordering is unlikely in the cobalt plane. Okay, so if I do photo emission on this system around 0.3, I see a crossing near 0.8. So it's metallic from photo emission point of view. Near 0.55, it's still metallic. And near 5, it looks like it has a spectral weight suppression. Now, as an experimentalist, I worry about that because if I look at a piece of sample that has poor quality, crystalline quality of 0.3, that also looks like that. So how do I know this is an intrinsic electronic gap in the system? And it turns out sodium cobalt oxide surface is such that it's not really and not only surface, it's bulk. Even in the bulk, it's very susceptible to disorder, out-of-plane disorder. So what we have done, we decided to grow a sample of potassium cobalt oxide. These are heavier atoms. So now I have a more stable system. And indeed, if I go to that composition, I can see this gap, this folding back. If there is a real gap, there should be a folding back. And that's exactly what we see. So that convinced us that the gap is real. So in other words, this is an insulator at low temperature. So we are interested in the momentum and temperature dependence of the system. So let's see what happens if I change K. Now I'm walking from gamma to M and rotating my cut to gamma to K, to the corner of the Brillouin zone. So it does look like it has some weak K dependence, but no clear node. In other words, it's gapped in all directions, all cuts. Okay, so if I plot that as a function of angle, this is how it looks like. It has some weak oscillation. It's almost constant. So what is the magnitude of the gap? How do I determine that? What I do is I have two possibilities. One is I can use a sample that is metallic but slightly different doping. And I can also have a global standard like gold, which is a gold non-reactive metal. So whether I use a metallic sample or a gold, the gap is robust, and it is about 8 millivolt. And this is roughly half of the optical gap observed in this compound. So ARPES naturally looks at one delta gap rather than two delta gap. Okay, so now I'm interested in the spectral function or spectral emission as a function of temperature. What happens to the gap as I raise temperature? So the gap anisotropy I showed is carried out at low temperature. Now I'm interested in raising temperature. So as I raise temperature, I see that the leading edge is closing. In other words, gap is closing. But what is interesting is that my spectral weight is not shifting to low energies. It's rather getting depleted. In other words, my quasi-particle coherence factor or quasi-particle spectral intensity is also disappearing. So now if I compare ARPES gap and the resistivity curve, it's the gap opens around the metal insulator transition, not at the stripe transition. So from this point of view, we think the stripes in cobalt are metallic. And this indirectly also confirms that ARPES in the sodium cobalt oxide system is fairly bulk representative because it has very nice correspondence with the metal insulator transition. Okay, so what is the interest in physics? So we repeat that on other samples, and we can try to fit it with BCS-like order parameter, although I have scatters in the plot, but it is indeed, there should be some fluctuation regime, but it's indeed correspond to the metal insulator transition.
In that graph, the gap opens at 90 Kelvin, is it? Or?
It's not, I would not say, see, this is my error bar, right? I would say it's somewhat around here. Because if I did not plot the point, just the error bar, it's hard to say it's 90 Kelvin.
But the resistivity is non-metallic, even above, like it's increasing, decreasing.
Yeah, it is increasing. Actually, if you really believe this data set, then you can see it's actually not at 50 Kelvin, but it's slightly larger. So, slightly above the metal insulator transition. I don't understand. It could be a surface effect, but I don't know. But what is remarkable is that there's so nice correspondence with the resistivity curve and the ARPES spectral function. Okay.
So the the normal state does not look fermi-liquid like here. Is that what I'm
taking? In this case, yes. It's so incoherent. It's not a fermi-liquid for sure.
Out of that.
Yes. Yes.
This is x equals half?
X equals half, right.
It's potassium, right? But not the sodium.
Potassium, sodium has similar behavior, although I cannot see the folding. Okay, so that's the gap evolution. It turns out this composition has sodium ordering. So this is what I'm terming symmetry breaking. So in this case, sodium has a different order. It has 2 by root 3 superlattice, and that induces, it's known from X-ray and neutron scattering, that induces some weak charge ordering in the cobalt plane. So some sort of symmetry breaking weak charge order is already present above room temperature. But gap opens at much lower temperature. So this symmetry breaking and the gap opening is not correlated, not directly correlated. Now one can see that all the phase transitions in the system are occurring below 150 Kelvin. So this goes back to our observation that the system loses spectral coherence. In other words, high temperature is not a good fermi-liquid. It has very low spectral weight, and one can, so here I'm plotting the amount of spectral weight as a function of temperature, and one can see that spectral weight sort of disappears if I extrapolate around 150 Kelvin. In other words, system is kind of very incoherent metal above 150 Kelvin, and so this is energy scale. So this is where, this is what I call quasi-particle formation, or quasi-particle starts to take form. So what is interesting is that this symmetry breaking, it is possible that this symmetry breaking is driving these phase transitions ultimately, but since there is electrons do not form any wave pattern, I mean they don't have enough coherence, they are unaware of this symmetry breaking. So as soon as they form their wave functions, they realize that there is a symmetry breaking and they start going through phase transition depending on different degree of coupling. So phase transitions in this system are set by the quasi-particle coherence scale, not the scale of the symmetry breaking temperature or energy scale. So motivated by this, we also consider the possibility that is it possible that the sodium is creating a new superstructure which is leading to some sort of particle hole instability on the Fermi surface? In other words, is sodium chopping the Fermi surface? And that leads to this. This is what we thought originally 2 years back. In that case, in other words, is it a nesting instability? And sodium order is chopping the Fermi surface, that's why we have this thing. So what is happening here is that this is, if you believe in this nesting picture, sodium order is causing this. This flower petal pattern should be your gap structure. And that's not what we observe. What we observe is very different from the flower petal pattern. So what is the nature of the insulating state? What are the possibilities? It's not a band insulator. Is it an Anderson insulator, localization by disorder, because the samples have some degree of disorder. But we do not see any finite DOS at Fermi level. So it's not Anderson insulator in that sense. But to argue that this is Mott physics, one should realize that this is very high doping compared to, say, copper oxides or other things. This is 50% doping, way over dope. So charge order, it's 1/2. So it cannot be commensurate. One possibility is that, consistent with neutron observation, that this interferomagnetic stripe order, it leads to some sort of pneumatic type charge order, which is possible at 1/2. But commensurate charge order is not possible. And of course, this broken symmetry induced by the sodium order is a perturbation to the system. So I do not have a final answer. What is the nature of these phase transitions? But one thing I can say confidently, that this is a rare case where quasi-particle coherence is driving the setting the phase transition scales.
Why do you say that? So I don't understand.
Because.
Are you saying? Make sure I understand what the answer. I mean, you don't see the quasi-particle above where the CDW develops, and once you go into the CDW, the quasi-particle shoots up.
Yeah.
But that's a different statement than saying it's driving.
I agree. What I mean is that it's setting.
The cuprates, I mean, at least an underdoped.
Yeah.
No quasi particle. You go into the superconducting state, and you get a quasi particle. So.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's driving.
Right. Yeah. No, I agree that driving is not the right word. It's the that is setting the energy scale when that happens.
They coincide.
Coincide. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I do not know what is driving, that is the mystery, right? So I do not know what is driving the phase transitions, but it seems like quasi-particle coherence is an important player.
Is there a symmetry change across the metal insulator
transitions? Not known from X-ray or neutron scattering. You mean the crystal structure? No, there is no structural. No, that is the biggest mystery. There is no magnetic change. The stripe order parameter, Young Lee and other people have observed, it doesn't care about the metal insulator transition. It's unnoticed by.
Is it second order or first order? Probably picks up some of the lattice.
The metal insulator transition? It's not very hysteretic. I mean, it's probably not strongly first order. If you do temperature cycling, it's at the same temperature. I haven't seen anybody claiming it's hysteretic.
Does it have large thermal power?
Yes, it has large thermal power at low temperature.
Oh, how about high temperature? Right?
High temperature, large thermal power is in all doping. It's not specific to this particular composition. Yes, it has large thermal power in all doping.
So it's almost classical thermal power.
Yes, yes. Actually, no, it's more than that. It's 10 times more than the classical thermal power.
No, it's classical in the sense that it's KB over E, not suppressed by temperature or something.
Right, it saturates. To some value, you can probably it's close to classical value.
And this potassium compound, what is systematics with X?
It has all these transitions, except that they are shifted.
No, we conversation, does it have Curie-Weiss metal?
Oh, that potassium compound is not stable in either side of the phase diagram. You cannot explore it.
It's
only near 0.5, yes. Okay, so the second topic is Dirac physics beyond graphene. Okay, so some of you might know there is a paper in Science Express which seems to claim that there is fractional quantum Hall effect in pure three-dimensional bismuth. And I found that very puzzling because my understanding, limited understanding of fractional quantum Hall effect is it requires some sort of two-dimensional electron gas, but that may not be true. So motivated by this, I worried, is this paper, is this finding related to some hidden surface state in bismuth, which leads to this fractional quantum Hall effect? If you look at the bulk band structure of bismuth, it's very much three-dimensional. So it's a puzzle. Is this fractional com? So the question I pose is that is it related to surface states? And that's something I can measure with ARPES. Now, if I look at the reciprocal space, it has a rhombohedral 3D structure, and one can see it has many faces. So this is the 111. It has many other faces. So in order to confirm that the fractional quantum Hall effect observed in bismuth has to do with a surface state, I had to look at all the surface states and get the electron density and all that and correlate it to the field where these Landau levels are observed. I mean, these fractional levels are observed. So, but there is a challenge here. Is the challenge is that this bismuth will not cleave in all surfaces. So the best cleave you can get is on 111 surface. And if you're lucky, you can get a cleave on 110 surface. Other than that, it's not easy to cleave. So we decided to explore 111 surface in some detail.
Is bismuth not famous as a semi-metal?
It is a semi-metal, yes.
So it is quite particular, right?
It's actually, it's Landau's favorite metal. Uh-huh. I think even Landau or people after him, they tested Landau theory on bismuth. And bismuth was the first metal ever in solid state physics where Fermi surface was determined experimentally using quantum oscillation experiment. It's well understood into the 60s. But yes.
Well, it's close to being a semi-metal? Is that what you're saying?
It's close to being, it has a small Fermi pocket. Yes. Very small. It's so small that if you were to get a quantum Hall effect, you could do that with almost room temperature. I'm sorry, in a lab source, like 10, 20 Tesla.
So it's
carrier density is very low.
I mean, it's tiny. I mean,
very, So you jumped ahead in my case, but it helped my point, is that if I measure the carrier concentration on the surface, as pointed out, it's very large. So you cannot get fractional quantum Hall effect from this surface at this concentration. So I ruled out that 111 surface is not responsible for creating the fractional quantum Hall effect in this bismuth. But then I cannot do more than that. But I found something more interesting. Now, I'm off fractional quantum Hall effect, but I found some other quantum Hall effect. So as it has been pointed out, bismuth has been, and its alloys have been studied to death since the 60s, mostly by the Russians. And there are enormous review volumes you can find. So it turns out that if you alloy it with antimony or tin, you'll get some sort of semi-metal to semiconductor transition. And so we decided to, I suggested my colleagues to grow these samples, and we decided to explore the system in more detail with a modern outlook. So what we see is that if you dope it with antimony or tin, then you get a very large resistivity into the semiconducting regime, and it does have a gap, as I will show. It turns out if you look into this Russian literature, then they could never resolve whether the saturation is due to imperfections or it is an intrinsic effect, because nobody has ever found a pure insulating state in bismuth-based compounds. And that, I'm jumping a bit, that I think it has to do with some surface state, metallic surface state, which is topologically protected, which always contributes to conductivity.
With 10% antimony, was it? I mean, what does it go in an ordered way? I mean, it's some...
It's disordered.
It's just completely disordered.
It is disordered, yes. Okay, so even if it is disordered, its electronic structure is very clean. That disorder, I'm getting into that. So if we cleave 111 surface right away, we can get a surface state, very clear. And you have large Luttinger volume here, so it's much larger than what you get, what is in bismuth, carrier concentration in bismuth, so you know that right away it cannot be bulk representative. So this Fermi surface is surface state. So there. But I need a critical check. Just as in sodium cobalt oxide, we have done systematic work to find out what is the surface effect, what is the bulk effect. In this case, we did a similar check.
What's the Fermi surface here exactly?
It's okay. We'll get into, okay. So you have a pocket here, another pocket here, the pocket here. So I'm now doing a six-fold symmetrization. I haven't measured those things, those part of the Brian zone. So you have a lot of pockets. So you have six pockets. So this is hole-like, this is electron-like, this is electron-like. So you have 12 pockets. 13 pockets on the surface state.
Is there any change in the physical structure when you dope antimony?
No. Crystal structure is not very sensitive to that. Well, your lattice constitute change, but no symmetry.
And antimony is directly above bismuth on the periodic table, is that right? Also,
yeah.
3p electrons.
Right. Yeah. So in this case, antimony goes to the same site, right? Because it's alloying, not. Okay, so if I take it, how do I get that surface state? Well, I mean, I want to check if it is surface state or bulk state. There are systematic recipes how to check that. So if I take this cut from gamma to M bar, so I see this band, this band, this band. I see all these bands. And I also see a weak trace of band here. And one can see that it's quite rich. So I have, I'm getting, so this is the M point. So this Fermi pocket or Fermi arc is coming from this, and that part, this is coming from that. Okay, so if I take a cut perpendicular to it, then what do I see? I see this, if I go through this, I see some intensity here, then very much linear bands. And the Fermi velocities are so large, and remarkably, they're almost similar, the same as graphene. This Fermi velocity is just same as graphene. So, but just if I take a graphene spectral function and compare it here, it will look like this is electron-doped graphene because you have electron. Now, so I suggested my colleague that let's suck out some electron from this system so we'll get a Dirac point. So he tried that, but he can never get, and we measure, repeatedly measured the samples, but we can never get rid of this thing. So in other words, it's something else. It's not doped electron in a graphene-like band structure. It's something else. But this linearity is quite remarkable, and somehow it has a graphene-like velocity.
Could you remind us again of what value of kx that scan was?
This scan?
Yeah.
This two, number two corresponds to.
Okay.
Yes.
But how, is there really a cone?
Yeah, I'm getting to that. Okay. So if what we do is, now with ARPES, one can do laser or low energy photoemission, but one can also do a photon energy dependence and check. The photon energy variation is directly related to the KZ dispersion, perpendicular dispersion. So if I have a surface state in a three-dimensional material, very easy to figure out. I measure KZ dispersion, photon energy dependence. One can see that the stuff I see at the Fermi level, it has no dispersion within my measurement uncertainty level. But the state below, it has crazy dispersion. This is the bulk band, and this is the surface band. So I label them ahead of time. So this is actually a surface state. It's not a bulk state. That's why when I suggested my colleague to hold up the system, it never worked, because I always getting, there's no way to get, somehow there's no way to get rid of the surface state. Okay. So this is my bulk band. It's coming from this thing. Okay. And it's a bit more complicated because at some momenta, the surface band and the bulk band coincide. The boundary condition is such that they coincide, it creates a surface resonance. And it turns out this Dirac point is near that surface resonance. Okay, so with that, we can then calculate. My students have done this. They did LDA calculation on this composition. And so by doing that, they calculated the bulk band structure. These thick solid lines are bulk band structure, and one can see that when I take the corresponding cut, I have this band, they correspond to the bulk band. They're slightly off in K space, but they're there. But this is new. This is not in the bulk LDA or tight binding calculation, so this must be the surface state. It has no origin in the bulk calculation, at least the calculation done by my student.
Is it at this doping, is that what you're saying?
At this composition. It has this...
But in LDA, sorry.
Well, I mean...
You're assuming the lattice constant?
Yeah, this is just rigid.
You're just moving the lattice.
Yes. For this.
What is the role of the antimony? Kind of the same question.
It's randomly.
But what's it doing? It's just changing the lattice constant?
It is just changing the lattice constant. So the role of antimony... to a significant extent, is pressurize the system. I'll get to that, what it does. It actually inverts. Just like in mercury-cadmium quantum well, where this spin Hall effect was confirmed, it goes through inversion. This system does the same thing, but in a three-dimensional way. Okay, so now in this set of data, there is a flat band. It's actually folded by a beam harmonic. It's actually bismuth shallow core level. Bismuth has large spin orbit coupling and shallow core level. So this is a bulk band. And then again, one can see that this is the surface band. And near L point, there is a resonance. So these two are bulk band. But one can see the Dirac point has resonance because bulk and surface bands are degenerate there. Okay. So then we worried about, we found a band insulator wrapped in a metallic surface state. What good is that? Is it of any use? So then we started talking with our colleagues, Holden and Hughes and other people. And Holden seemed to have this paper back in the 80s, this quantum Hall effect without magnetic field, without external, without Landau levels. And condensed matter, I forgot the title, condensed matter analog of parity anomaly, something like that. I never understood that paper. But what I understand is that in a conventional quantum Hall system, your bulk gap opened by the magnetic fields, and you have cyclotron resonance. That's your gap. But if your time reversal invariance is preserved, then you can get that through a spin orbit coupling, intrinsic spin orbit coupling. So that then one can work out. I borrowed a slide from Xu Chang Zhang. This spin hull conductance, and then this dissipationless edge spin currents are robust because of TRI forbids elastic backscattering. You have topological protection there. Okay, so one can, I don't need theoretical introduction to this community, but this is spin hull effect. So I spoke with Nagaosa, how do I know a material is a candidate for spin hull effect? So he tried to explain this Fafian to me, which I never understood. Then we spoke with other...
There's a missing key in front.
Okay. I see. I hope Mr. Fafian is not... Okay, so I understood this paper. There is an easier solution if the system has inversion symmetry. And then what you have to do, this you have to figure out what is the Z2 invariant, which relates to parity of block wave functions at time reversal invariant momenta. And the boundary states of quantum Hall effect, 1D edge states, they go into 2D surface states. And that's fantastic because now I can do ARPES. And I learned beforehand that the surface states I observed, there's no way to get rid of them. Okay, so what are such things?
I'm just confused because in your LDA calculation you had these. There was no spin orbit coupling.
No, there is not LD, actually tight binding with spin orbit coupling.
Oh, that had the spin orbit in there.
Yes, tight binding had spin orbit in there.
Oh,
yeah. Well, but the bulk band structure is the deeper lying bands. They don't care whether you have spin orbit coupling or not. So my purpose was to compare with the bulk deeper lying bands. Okay. So there are two types of surface states. One type is like this, which cannot be perturbed away, but there are other surface states that can be perturbed away. And these surfaces, you need to watch how many times they cross formulable at the time reversal invariant momenta. And it turns out if you take a pair of time reversal invariant momenta, then if it crosses one odd number of times, you get non-trivial Z2. If it crosses even number of times, then it's a trivial thing. You might be able to get rid of that. So Xu Chang gave me this slide that graphene has very weak spin orbit coupling. And gallium arsenide, same case. Then he has this prediction on mercury telluride. And he argued that this one should be able to, by changing well thickness, one should be able to observe this topological quantum phase transition. So I looked up this band structure. So in that case, it goes back to her question, this, what does antimony do in the system? So what antimony does, it leads, okay. So in mercury telluride, you have this, it's metal. You have this gamma 8, gamma 6 bands. As you pressurize the system by putting cadmium in there, it leads to this inversion and it turns it into an insulator. So without knowing that, we were doing that already. We were putting antimony into the system and it inverted the band. That's why, okay, so let me jump into that. So what Fu and Kane told us, that if you put antimony in the system, they already had a paper, but in our case, we had this other stuff. So it leads to this symmetric and asymmetric band inversion. And accidentally, we were already looking at this regime, in the band inverted regime, when you are past the Dirac point. And that allowed us to locate the Kramer's degenerate point. Otherwise, we would not be seeing that. Because now we have opened up a gap, and the Kramer's point is in between. Okay? So the fact that actually 10% is the one I showed the data on, 9% also has this divergence. So we are indeed in that regime. If you take, this is pure bismuth. It's metallic, semi-metallic. In this case, it's almost insulating. Okay, so a band insulator should, Fermi surface on a band insulator would be like this. You have, actually, in this particular compound, it is expected, well, nobody has calculated that. Our finding is that it's like that. You have this Fermi surface. You have one pocket here, another pocket here. This is shared. And it turns out, when you enter into the inverted regime, somehow this will fractionalize. And now you see you had 1, 2, 3, 4 crossing. Now you have, because of fractionalization, you have 5 crossing. In the inverted regime, now your Z2 number would be negative.
I thought you said you opened up a gap.
No, this is surface Fermi surface in the bulk band insulator. I'm not showing the bulk band. This is the surface Fermi surface on the insulator.
You have a surface state all the way.
Yeah, surface state is metallic. Okay. So underlying band is, yeah.
So have you checked the pure antimony case, y x equal to 1, pure antimony? Have you checked the Fermi surface on that? On the surface?
No, we haven't looked at that.
Yeah, but according to your argument, the pure antimony has already inverted.
It would be interesting. Well, that is not my argument, though. We have to observe. We have to measure and see if that is there. Yeah, but we can.
What's the statement here?
Okay. So the statement here. Okay, this is actually cleaner. I'm interested to measure the bulk and the surface electronic structure and their connectivity. So since it is, I cannot measure both bulk and surface electronic structure with same photon energy, I have to add data from different experiments. So this is, in this case, this is just schematics. These shaded regions are bulk electronic structure. Below the Fermi level, this is, we did not measure, unoccupied part, ARPES doesn't measure. So this is just schematic. So I kept the surface measurement, just the surface state measurement. So I see a crossing here, a crossing here, crossing here, crossing here, crossing here. And these two, gamma and MR, they form a pair of time reversal invariant momenta. So I just count how many times they cross the Fermi level. They cross odd number of times. And what happens in bismuth? So the interesting part is what happens here near M bar point. So this cut is critical. From here to here, this is the, there should be a gap. It's very little gap, but in the scale there should be a gap. So I have to compare bismuth and other concentrations near this cut. So this is what I'm comparing. If I go to bismuth, if I take that cut, my band is below the Fermi level. So it had 4 crossings. But if I go to this band inverted regime, I have one more crossing coming from here. So there's no intensity here, but here there is intensity. It's weak, but it's not band crossing. It's better seen in the raw data than the image. So this is the main difference. So in other words, there is some sort of topological change. I do not know how to classify that on experimental ground, But in the band inverted regime, there is a topological change. That's all I can confirm.
Could you say, it's just a firm surface topology is changing. Isn't that a better, or isn't that equivalent statement?
Yeah, it is a change. But if you look at this thing, if you want to evaluate this number, what matters in their theory is whether this number is odd or even. I'm saying that unlike bismuth, this number is odd. Bismuth satisfies this part. And of course, I cannot look at the unoccupied part, so I cannot...
What's trim? Sorry, number of puzzles.
Trim is time reversal invariant momenta.
Oh, so you just take any two?
Yeah.
So it's all two or just particular?
Well, I mean, in principle, you should take every pair.
Yeah,
but it turns out, with this type of reciprocal space, only in a hexagonal lattice, only gamma and m satisfy trim. K does not satisfy trim, especially if you have Dirac point. So what we have found is that there's a large spin orbit splitting because, as Matthew pointed out, this on the tight binding we fit with our bulk ARPES data is we need a large spin orbit coupling to fit the data. So that confirms that it has large spin orbit coupling, but this is not unexpected. Bismuth has large spin orbit coupling, atomic origin. We confirmed, which Russians could never confirm, that bismuth in those doping, in those concentration is the band insulator. It's not, there is a real gap in the spectral function. It is a band insulator. And we also confirmed, which could be done, theorists could have done that, symmetry flip band inversion is involved, which is trivial to show. Because it's equivalent to pressurizing the system. In Xu Chang's system, it is equivalent to changing the well separation. And then there is a number of crossing is changing as one is pressurizing the system. In other words, there is a topology change. So it satisfies all these things. Okay, so here are the hard numbers. Band insulator, we isolate the massive Dirac point. You can fit it with a equation like this. And not only that, M is a function of X. So we had not located the Dirac point, but we, based on our band systematics, we believe we know where the real Dirac point is. So the final thing we want to check, if there is spin texture on the Fermi arcs, that can be done with circular polarized light, photoemission with circular polarized light. So we'll be able to figure out that. This is work in progress. Okay, so this is our summary, that it goes through some sort of Z number change. In the band inverted regime. It's just 3D analogs of mercury telluride quantum well experiment. Okay, so what are the future directions we plan to pursue is we want to locate the real Dirac point and just play with it. Say, change, one way to change whether there is a real Dirac point without doing ARPES is we dope it with tin or something and look at thermopower. Because if I look at thermopower is very sensitive, whether my Fermi level is here or here. So if my Fermi level is here, then thermopower will have a positive sign. And here thermopower will have a negative sign. So by doing this bulk experiment, we should be able to locate actually. We are already in the process of doing that, and we, in fact, know it's near 4%.
But don't you have oven
Huh?
Upper surface states.
I'm sorry? Surface state, but you can get rid of that by changing the surface and bulk area to bulk volume to surface area ratio. You can look at the scaling. This is actually we are trying to do already. Just look at samples, do transport measurements on samples that has different area versus volume. Then you can look for scaling, because then the surface and bulk contribution would be different.
But my question was that where is the surface states, where is the Fermi surface?
Yes, there is a Fermi surface, yeah.
So wouldn't it dominate over any contribution from Dirac point?
Yeah, there is contribution. I mean, there is contribution from there, but we know the sign of the carrier sign on the surface state, right? Because not all of them are hole-like, right? We can calculate what is the volume. Just count how many electrons are on the surface. And then you can account for that. And also, if you make the bulk much bigger, then you're dominated by the bulk state than the surface.
Well, you're saying close enough to the Dirac point, then any finite system size, the surface will always dominate?
Is there necessarily any reason for that? I thought Dirac point is already very singular. Okay, so I did not get to talk about these other things, but we are in full scale. We have 3 PRLs on this compound, which came out this year. So we'll continue to understand this competition and coexistence of excitonic Korn, Overhauser's CDW and superconductivity in this system, and we want to observe quantum fractionalization in that Kanoda compound.
Remind me what you can look for that fractionalization.
Oh, just look at the spectral function, whether it has two, whether, okay, so it's...
Can we get through the losses?
Actually, I have a slide on that. Let's see. Yeah. So if I take out an electron, right, then I create these two topological defect. I want to then spin on and hold on. This velocity is scaled with T. This is scaled with J, right? I'm not doing optical experiments, so you can ignore that. But in a single band system, spectral function will have two branch. If fractionalization has been realized in 2D. We have done that in 1D, but I want to do that on 2D on anybody who claims to have a spin liquid. But it's important to check if that spin liquid is in a fractionalized phase or not.
There photo emission on any organic?
No. There is photo emission on TMTSF. It's becoming possible. The challenge is how to control the dosage to save the sample and still get your experiments out. There are a lot of technical development in these days. You can do those things. You can even get close to doing nano-ARPS. You can even, I would say in 5 years from now, you should be able to look at these edge states by focusing your beam on the sample edge.
But in the organic, where in the phase diagram are you trying to work? So, I mean, you
have just undoped.
No, I know, but it has
in the insulator.
So ARPS has to be conducting, doesn't it?
No, not necessarily. I mean, one can do ARPS on undoped compound. There are many, many work.
You can do ARPS on an insulator, you don't get
yes.
Hard to build up.
Well, it depends on the threshold, but these are sufficiently conducting. For example, in pseudo gap or in other very, say, LSCO, x equals 0, there are a lot of ARPS work. You can look at these lightly doped systems, right?
It has to conduct a little bit.
Right.
Good enough conduction even at how low in temperature is the conduction good enough? I mean,
no, you don't want to go to low temperature. In that case, you want to have work at some finite temperature so that you don't charge up.
No, I understand. So how, just in practice, how low temperature do you think you're going to be?
For example,
relative to this for transition and the...
Yes, it should be possible to work around 20 Kelvin. It's not very low temperature, but if your J is large, and T or J are well separated to different, very different energy scales, then you should be able to see that. It's set by that. How well separated fermion and holon velocity, spin on and holon velocities are, then you're trying to measure band dispersion of two branches. Okay, so most experimentalists want to develop a technique. I do try to develop a technique, and my interest is I do both of these techniques, but it turns out if these techniques, you can put them into perspective how closely they relate to a fundamental system Hamiltonian. In other words, ARPES spectral function is just very directly related to a system Hamiltonian through the first order Green function, and this collective response says they are two particle correlation functions. They are related to the second order Green function. So these are the most fundamental spectroscopies of condensed matter. And you know that in both ARPES and neutron scattering has been fantastically productive. And there is technical reason why that is so. It turns out to cover a large momentum range with neutron, you don't need to go to very high neutron energies. So that means, since you do not need to go to high neutron energies, you can have good relative resolution. That's why neutron scattering is so successful as a technique. ARPES has been suffering from surface, but as I showed that ARPES, there are elaborate techniques how to separate surface and bulk states in all fine details. Okay, so you can pull out many papers that that has very large, high degree of citation on these two techniques, but I have arbitrarily defined this thing.
It's greater than or equal to one paper. It's not a null set.
Right, yeah. Well, paper. I mean, there is no single paper that has this level of citation with this technique. I have been working with this technique. This was my PhD thesis.
It's zero now.
And I have one of the most high-cited papers, but it doesn't satisfy that. So I want to. So there is opportunity to develop.
But as soon as it does, then you will have arrived.
Yeah. Right. Okay. So if we can do 10 millivolt or 20 millivolt inelastic X-ray scattering, what type of thing we would be looking for, would be after. So theoretical predictions of collective charge modes related to many body phases of matter go back as early as the 70s. For example, Leggett and Schiffer talked about order parameters with nodes back in the 70s, way before HITC was discovered. And they even talked about a spin mode at pi-pi, which was discovered much later. This is neutron resonance. So they also talked about the charge analog of these things. They stabilize into the because of the node structure. Okay, so these modes have never been observed because their spectral weight they increase at higher momentum, and optical spectroscopies are confined near this line. Okay, so that's one example. Another example would be some sort of collective mode recently predicted by Patrick Lee, that it also it has structure factor, form factor to peak at finite Q. So these are the, of course there is this liquid crystal, this dynamic stripe type mode that appears at finite frequency, but not at zero frequency. So these are the experiments that will be enabled by this technique. Okay, so this is an example. Where do we stand at this point? So we know that NCCO has a critical point near this 14-15%, and if we try to trace the softening of the charge collective modes by present day inelastic X-ray scattering, and this is the best we can do. We can trace how these modes soften, but you can see this is 2 eV, this is 1 eV, this is 500 millivolt. That's where I stop and I then extrapolate. But much of the interesting physics is really here. So if we can get 10 millivolt resolution with other sensitivity, elastic reduction and other things, we should be able to study how collective modes behave in the vicinity of a critical point. That's another direction of research. Okay, so with that in mind, we are developing this technique. We have instrumentation design. It's going to be at the advanced light source, not too far from here. Well, compared to where I live. So the other, you can try to look for this infrared collective modes or exciton plasmon duality. In other words, you have, if you have a metal, if you have an insulator, your collective response, dominant low energy collective response is in the exciton channel. And then as you go from metal to insulator to metal transition, you that exciton transforms into a plasmon. So in correlated system, how that happens is very unclear. There are enormous number of metal insulator transitions, so we'll be able to address those things. Okay, I reached my conclusion. So my conclusion is that the electronic quasi-particle coherence scale sets the electronic phase transition scales. May not be driving that. And then we observed a non-graphene Dirac point, which is interesting in connection with a topological insulator. And we are developing inelastic resonant X-ray scattering at Berkeley, which will allow us to probe charge channel in unprecedented level of resolution. Thank you.
Yeah, maybe for one question or so before.
It's not a very important one, but I was confused by your statement that exciton goes over into a plasma. I mean, in many body language or electronic interaction language, one is electron hole with an interaction, and the other one is a particle-particle with an interaction. And that's really, from my point of view, rather different physics behind it.
Yeah, so my point is that if you do experiments, where is your dominant spectral weight? Because we're limited by going to low fine resolution, we are limited to look at only the sharpest signals. So what I mean is that in the insulator, the sharpest signal at low energy would be excitons, and in the metal, the dominant signal we should be able to detect is the plasmon. And I did not mention, near Landau damping by go to high Q, where particle hole continuum and the stable collective mode merge, we'll be able to learn a lot about the internal charge dynamics of the system. This is related to the experimental limitations. It would be difficult in a metal with this technique to look at Fermi surface excitations at zero energy because you have elastic peak. Yeah.
Exactly. All right. That's a question. Let's thank the speaker again and remember he's